Marking the 10-year anniversary of the Iraq War, a new documentary was released this week revealing a somber Dick Cheney who deeply regrets not having been able to kill more people in the controversial conflict. In a rare, candid look at his own legacy, the former vice president stated, quote, "I am still haunted to this day by the staggering number of Iraqi soldiers, civilians, American servicemen, and private contractors I failed to kill in Iraq. Picturing the faces of each and every man and woman who survived the combat, me up at night." In a particularly vulnerable moment, Cheney described that every time he saw a cargo plane full of flag-draped military caskets, he was, quote, deeply saddened, wondering how many more he could have fit in there. Got them all wet, shaking what they mama gave me.
Tonight, under heavy bombardment, on the day the war started. American and British troops are in action on land, sea, and in the air.
The United States and the international community have made every effort to avoid war.
Marking the 10-year anniversary of the Iraq War, a new documentary was released this week revealing a somber Dick Cheney who deeply regrets not having been able to kill more people in the controversial conflict. In a rare, candid look at his own legacy, the former vice president stated, quote, "I am still haunted to this day by the staggering number of Iraqi soldiers, civilians, American servicemen, and private contractors I failed to kill in Iraq."
Yeah.
Diplomacy and sanctions over more than a decade have not worked. And now, by rejecting President Bush's ultimatum, the Iraqi regime has chosen military conflict over peaceful disarmament.
Market Power, community-based radio. Hey, listen, this is some crazy breakthrough. Gaslamp Killer from off his newest album. This is the Micro Power radio show done by yours truly, Furious George. And it may be offensive, especially this evening, where I'm going to go off and be furious and outraged about it being the 10-year anniversary of the Iraq War. So we're going to mark the occasion. Some clips not only hitting the stupidity of the Bush administration, but also the liberal media that helped sell the war. And everybody else who's guilty. For everyone who also has been a part of the whole movement to stop the war, like myself and others protested at the time, maybe this show will be a little more cathartic for those of you in the audience. I'm furious. I do this every Thursday. It's part of the Furious George experience. We've been doing it for 15 years, and you can check more Furious George shows out at furiousg.blogspot.com. Every once in a while, the show can get offensive. We're going to say some curse words and maybe call people names. If you can handle that, just keep on cranking through. Thanks for supporting Micropower Radio. I'm furious. Furious!
We're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the Iraq War, March 20th, 2003, when it began. Few days, it'll be March 20th, 2013. But I think it's really important for everybody out there to know how many people we murdered in Iraq, how we got into that war, and who were some of the liberals, supposed liberals, who led us into that war, so that we don't depend on, we don't make that mistake again. And of course, people should know how many people were killed. Nobody knows a real figure. There's numbers that go from 170,000 people killed, including combatants, maybe 120,000 civilians, up to a million. The Lancet reports 600,000 people killed with some kind of violence, whether that includes starvation or just plain old murders. But it's a huge number. And when you think about that number, you have to think, how did we get into this war, which I considered at the time an illegal and unnecessary war, and which I was not alone. It was the biggest demonstrations ever in the world against the war. In fact, they called the demonstration in Rome against the war in February 2003. It was 3 million people in Rome, 36 million people worldwide, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions in the United States as well. And yet we went to war in the United States, or on behalf of the United States, despite this. And March 20th, 2003, when it began, a few days, it'll be March 20th, 2013,
to begin with an air campaign, but the battle plan has been turned on its head and the ground campaign is coming first. Thousands of American troops are already inside.
There's been light bombing to the northwest of Baghdad today and last night, and it was pretty scary for about an hour. The building shook and the windows rattled. Sometimes we could even hear the bombs fly overhead. It was sort of a rippling swoosh.
What will follow will not be a repeat of any other conflict. It will be of a force and scope and scale that has been beyond what has been seen before.
English fuck falls into many grammatical categories.
To the Iraqi people, let me say that the day of your liberation will soon be at hand. Coalition forces will take every precaution to protect innocent civilians.
And I think it's really important for everybody out there to know how many people we murdered in Iraq, how we got into that war, and who were some of the liberals, supposed liberals, who led us into that war, so that we don't depend on, we don't make that mistake again. And of course, people should know how many people were killed. Nobody knows a real figure. There's numbers that go from 170,000 people killed, including combatants, maybe 120,000 civilians, up to a million.
Belongs to the Iraqi people. And once Saddam Hussein's regime is removed, we intend to see that functional and political authority is placed in the hands of Iraqis as quickly as is possible. Coalition forces will stay only as long as necessary to finish the job, and not a day longer.
Allied troops would be welcomed as liberators. That's not happening. Those who may have been against the regime are even more against the U.S. and British invasion.
All who have joined this cause will be able to say to the Iraqi people, we were proud to fight for your freedom.
Do you think the American people are prepared for a long, costly, and bloody battle with significant American casualties?
I don't think it's likely to unfold that way, Tim, because I really do believe we will be treated as liberators.
These are Arabs, 23 million of the most educated people in the Arab world, who are going to welcome us as liberators.
After liberation, the streets in Basra and Baghdad are sure to erupt in joy.
Saddam Hussein's Iraqi regime represents a clear threat.
I believe that Saddam Hussein presents a clear and present danger to the United States of America with his continued pursuit to acquire weapons of mass destruction, and there's very little doubt that he would use them.
Each day, he inches closer to his long-term goal of nuclear capability.
Every additional day that Saddam Hussein is in power in Iraq is an additional day of danger.
Numerous human sources tell us that the Iraqis are moving not just documents and hard drives, but weapons of mass destruction to keep them from being found by inspectors.
I think we will find caches of weapons of mass destruction. Absolutely.
We know they have weapons of mass destruction. We know they have active programs. There isn't any debate about it.
Simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
The smoking gun is no longer a single bullet. The smoking gun may be a nuclear bomb.
We don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud.
We cannot wait for the final proof. The smoking gun. It could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
We cannot wait.
If someone is waiting for a so-called smoking gun, it's certain that we will have waited too long.
Saddam Hussein has worked to rebuild his chemical and biological weapons stock, his missile delivery capability, and his nuclear program. He has also given aid, comfort, and sanctuary to terrorists.
The Lancet reports 600,000 people killed with some kind of violence, whether that includes starvation or just plain old murders, but it's a huge number. And when you think about that number, you have to think, how did we get into this war, which I considered at the time an illegal and unnecessary war, and which I was not alone. It was the biggest demonstrations ever in the world against a war. In fact, they called the demonstration in Rome against the war in February 2003. It was 3 million people in Rome, 36 million people worldwide, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions in the United States as well.
Including Al-Qaeda members. Any vote that might lead to war should be hard. But I cast it with conviction.
I will vote for the Lieberman-Warner Amendment to authorize the use of military force against Iraq. I do not believe this is a rush to war. I believe it's a march to peace and security.
From what we hear, we suspect that this is going to turn into a guerrilla war, an urban guerrilla war, which I think is the worst nightmare of the U.S. and British military.
Those were some of the voices you may have heard on March 20th, 2003.
many of us called it Bush's war, but as I'll explain, it's not just Bush's war. There's a New York Times war, there's Bill Keller's war, Tom Friedman's war, and a number of other people who I will mention. The way they sold the war to the American people were two primary things. One was that Iraq was somehow developing weapons of mass destruction, of which they had literally no evidence, none at all. There were weapons inspectors who kept going there, came back with no evidence. The weapons inspectors group said there was no evidence of weapons of mass destruction, yet they sold us the war based in part on weapons of mass destruction.
People be given the facts about
foreign policy.
You know,
Senator, that the American people cannot formulate
Why
and execute foreign policy.
I am continuing and I am increasing the search for every possible path to peace.
This is what the war in Vietnam is all about.
We maintain our strength in order to deter and defend against aggression, to preserve freedom and peace.
Our desire for peace.
The United States wants peace.
We seek peace. We strive for peace.
We expect every American to support our military, and if they can't do that, to shut up.
Well, Colonel, it's a great way to go to war.
Short of a bullet to the back of his head or he leaves the country, war is inexorable.
War is inevitable, and it is approaching inexorably.
You know, let's not just stop at a couple of cruise missiles.
We'll pound them with 2,000-pound bombs and then go in.
2,000-pound bombs in urban areas?
Oh, sure.
We have a number of correspondents in bed with our troops.
Very deeply embedded in a personal way with
sources that have deceived us so constantly don't deserve our trust.
Hostile actions against United States ships on the high seas in the Gulf of Tonkin.
The destroyer was carrying out a mission of patrol in those waters, in international waters.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Uranium from Africa.
Cyber attacks.
Nuclear program.
Biological weapons.
Iraq has weapons of mass destruction.
Trust me. Trust me.
We're not leaving so long as I'm the president. That would be a huge mistake.
If this little nation goes down the drain and can't maintain her independence, ask yourself what's going to happen to all the other little nations.
It would not bring peace. It would bring more war.
Be overthrown. And it's that selectivity of history that's a very effective form of propaganda.
This selective view of reality, buttressed by these fear-based appeals, represents a larger pre-war pattern. The repeated claim that the United States uses military force only with great reluctance.
We still seek no wider war.
The United States does not start fights. America does not seek conflict.
I don't like to use military force.
Our nation enters this conflict reluctantly,
and only for the most virtuous of reasons. First and foremost, to spread freedom and democracy.
We want nothing for ourselves, only that the people of South Vietnam be allowed to guide their own country in their own way.
The rhetoric of democracy is part of the process of convincing people that even though unpleasant things must be done sometimes in its name, like bombing other countries,
Democracy is really what it's about.
The United States has been engaged in an effort to stop the advance of communism in Central America by doing what we do best, by supporting democracy.
And it's almost as though repeating it enough times makes it so.
Our cause of liberty, our cause of freedom, our cause of compassion and understanding.
People want democracy, peace, and the chance for a better life in dignity and freedom.
We want to lift lives around the world, not take them.
These are forms of propaganda that are insidious because they tug at our heartstrings.
We must get the Kosovo refugees home safely. Minefields will have to be cleared. Homes destroyed by Serb forces will have to be rebuilt. Homeless people in need of food and medicine.
Of course we want to help other people. These are propaganda messages that say, don't just think of yourself. America can't just be selfish. It makes bombing other people ultimately seem like an act of kindness, of altruism.
Forces joined our NATO allies in airstrikes against Serbian forces responsible for the brutality in Kosovo. We are upholding our values, protecting our interests, and advancing the cause of peace.
Belgrade's largest heating plant up in flames.
But even as planes of the multinational forces attack Iraq, I prefer to think of peace, not war.
If my motives are pure, then the fact that I'm killing people may not be too upsetting. As a matter of fact, it may indicate that I'm killing people for very good reasons.
America will stand with the allies of freedom to support democratic movements in the Middle East and beyond, with the ultimate goal of ending tyranny in our world.
So you have kind of the high ground president with the lofty motives being proclaimed. We're told that peace is being sought, alternatives to war are being explored. And that's kind of, you know, the official story.
And I am continuing and I am increasing the search for every possible path to peace.
Whether we're talking about President Johnson, President Nixon, or the president today, you have one chief executive after another in the White House saying how much they love peace and hate war.
Strength in order to deter and defend against aggression, to preserve freedom and peace. No one, friend or foe, should doubt our desire for peace.
The United States wants peace.
We seek peace. We strive for peace.
Every president of the last half century has gone out of his way to say that he wanted peace and wanted to avoid war.
I pledged in my campaign for the presidency to end the war in a way that we could win the peace.
Even while ordering military action.
I still have to have those rights on top.
By claiming that there was a relationship between Saddam Hussein, who led Iraq at the time, and Al-Qaeda. And of course, Al-Qaeda was on everyone's minds because this was just 2 years after 9/11. And how did they go about getting and achieving and establishing that relationship, which even Colin Powell spoke about when he spoke to the UN in a speech that convinced many people that we had to go to war with Iraq? They did it through torture. And in particular, there was a man named Al-Libi who was waterboarded. And when he was waterboarded, as he said later, I would have said anything to stop being waterboarded. And what he said, and what actually Cheney, our vice president at the time, was looking for, and why he was actually torturing people or directing them to be tortured, was because he wanted to prove a link between Al-Qaeda and Iraq.
This paradox, in a way, of the president who has just ordered massive military violence and lethal action by the Pentagon, turning around and saying, I want to oppose violence and promote peace. Becomes perpetual when it's used as a rationale for peace.
We cannot wait for the final proof. The smoking gun could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
That this represents hurried or precipitous action. The moment of truth has arrived.
Army Chief of Staff General Shinseki said it would take several hundred thousand troops on the ground.
There are so many variables that it is not knowable. The idea that it would take several hundred thousand U.S. forces, I think, is far from the mark.
Some of the higher-end predictions that we have been hearing recently, such as the notion that it will take several hundred thousand U.S. troops to provide stability in post-Saddam Iraq, are wildly off the mark.
If war is upon us because Saddam Hussein has made that choice, we will have the best equipment available for our troops, the best plan available for victory.
We're dealing with a country that can really finance its own reconstruction in a relatively simple.
Office of Management and Budget estimated it would be something under $50 billion.
Outside estimates say up to $300 billion.
Baloney.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
In the end, this torture was a key element in proving something, allegedly proving something, that led us into a war that killed
well over probably 500,000 people. So that's one lesson you ought to take out of this, is torture is one of the worst things you can use for gaining actual intelligence.
Let's talk about today, 2013. What do you see day to day? What are the primary issues of concern in Iraq?
Every other year, when we think that the situation is becoming stable and that we might have a normal life, a new political conflict issue comes along. Day to day, we cannot even access our residential zones. We have checkpoints in the entrance of every neighborhood, and when we open the TVs, all we see is threats between politicians who are assumed to be of this sect and that, which is the Sunni and the Shiite, and we are stuck in the middle of this. The only stable and continuous thing in our lives in Iraq is the insecurity that we are threatened with day to day.
Showed that decent American citizens were as capable of committing acts against their conscience as the Germans had been under the Nazis.
Struck by a sniper's bullet in Baghdad's Sadr City. The single bullet paralyzed him from the chest down and changed his life forever. Now, 9 years later, at the age of 33, Thomas has decided to end his life. He announced recently that he'll soon stop his nourishment, which comes in the form of liquid through a feeding tube. Thomas was the subject of the award-winning documentary Body of War, made by legendary TV talk show host Phil Donahue and filmmaker Ellen Spiro. The 2007 film follows Thomas's rehabilitation, struggles with his injuries, and his political awakening to become one of the most prominent anti-war U.S. veterans of the invasion and occupation of Iraq. He was first moved to action by the efforts of Cindy Sheehan, to speak with President George W. Bush while he was on vacation at his so-called ranch in Crawford, Texas. Sheehan's son, Casey, was killed in Baghdad on the same day Thomas was shot. She would often say, on 4-04-04. Sheehan wanted to ask President Bush, for what noble cause did my son die? I asked Thomas if anything would change his mind about his decision to end his life. No, he said, adding that if he were not in such intense, constant pain, then he would not be taking this course. He said we wouldn't be having this conversation. This week, Thomas released a letter titled The Last Letter, a message to George W. Bush and Dick Cheney from a dying veteran. In it, Thomas wrote,
"May they justice, but now I you are each guilty of grievous war crimes, of plunder, and finally of murder, including the murder of thousands of young Americans, my fellow veterans, whose future you stole."
Phil Donahue has stayed in touch with Thomas for years since making Body of War. Donahue told me the making of the film was a spiritual experience, he said, a chapter of our lives. He says he understands Thomas's decision.
I understand his decision. So does Claudia. The people closest to him understand his position. Thomas told me, this is a couple years ago, after the embolism, which, by the way, he presented at the emergency room with a swollen arm, and it hurt. And they gave him pain pills. And the next morning, he was found in a coma, in bed.
A second thing which has always bothered me is the role of the so-called liberal media, whether that's the New York Times, the New Yorker, other New Republic, and the key people who ran all of that media. This is called the liberal media. You know, I don't think, Paul, that there's a war that the New York Times has not supported, but it was a particularly nasty piece of business on the Iraq War. You had, first of all, Bill Keller, I'm not sure he was executive editor during the beginning, but right around that period, the head of the Times, major reporter, major person at the New York Times. He wrote earlier, after 9/11, an 8,000-word article in the New York Times Magazine about what the effect of one kiloton bomb would be if it went into Times Square. In other words, getting everybody totally fearful of what would happen if Iraq had a weapon of mass destruction. Then the Times published column after column by Judy Miller and others, pushing the idea that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, columns that the Times ultimately had to apologize for.
The irony of investing huge amounts of money to rebuild Iraq when we have urgent needs here at home. Has not been lost on late night comedians. One talk show host commented that if President Bush's plan to provide Iraqis with food, medicine, supplies, housing, and education proves to be a success, it could eventually be tried in the United States too. These comedians are on their toes. They're not overlooking any bets. If the United States leads the charge to war in the Persian Gulf, we may be lucky and achieve a rapid victory. I hope we will be lucky. Perhaps the odds for being lucky are, I guess, 90-1. But, Madam President, we may not be lucky. But even if we are lucky, we will then have to face a second war, a war to win the peace in Iraq. That war will not be over in a day, or a week, or a month,
be sure,
or a year.
That there are no other lights on in the room except for the
one burning candle.
Now we begin. Get ready. We'll be right back.
war will last several years, perhaps many years, and will surely cost hundreds of billions of dollars. In the light of this enormous task, it would be a great mistake to expect that this will be a replay of the 1991 war. The stakes are much higher in this conflict. Despite all of these risks and costs, it seems that the administration continues to move our country closer and closer and closer to war. Investing huge amounts of money to rebuild Iraq when we have urgent needs here at home. The irony of investing huge.
Obedience or threaten recrimination. Instead of isolating Saddam Hussein, we seem to have succeeded in isolating ourselves.
As Americans, we like to think that we're not subjected to propaganda from our own government. Certainly that we're not subjected to propaganda that's trying to drag the country into war. As in the case of setting the stage for the invasion of Iraq.
Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Botulin, VX, sarin, nerve agent.
Iraq and Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda.
Iraq and Al-Qaeda.
Terrorism.
Cyber attacks.
Nuclear program.
Biological weapons.
Cruise missiles. Ballistic missiles.
Chemical and biological weapons.
Iraq has weapons of mass destruction.
President Bush has said Iraq has weapons of mass destruction.
Tony Blair has said Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Donald Rumsfeld has said Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Richard Butler has said they do. The United Nations has said they do. The experts have said they do.
Marking the 10-year anniversary of the Iraq War, a new documentary was released this week revealing a somber Dick Cheney who deeply regrets not having been able to kill more people in the controversial conflict. In a rare, candid look at his own legacy, the former vice president stated, quote, "I am still haunted to this day by the staggering number of Iraqi soldiers, civilians, American servicemen, and private contractors I failed to kill in Iraq."
Okay, this is Mike Pop Radio. I'm Furious George. I've been spotlighting the 10th anniversary of the Iraq War and how presidents and pundits spun us into the biggest catastrophe of my lifetime. So, if you are down for putting up a big middle finger to that whole episode and other current episodes relating to use of drones and other ways to attack and kill innocent people, keep listening to Micropower Radio. We are local, non-commercial, non-industrial, pro-peace, and we're run by the community, which happens to be one of the coolest ones here in the country. If the fascists want to put a fence around Carbo and Chapel Hill, there must be something right going on here. So we are broadcasting here from the free side, the unoccupied community, and this happens to be just the night where we are targeting the crap going on still with the Iraq War. I'm Furious George. Thanks for listening to Micropower Radio. Stick around for more of it. Here's some craziness from Ohm Unit. I'll be back.